call the meeting to order. Do roll call.
Councilmember Erickson.
Councilmember Zhang.
Present.
Councilmember Klonowski.
Here.
Councilmember Winston, or Mayor Winston, excuse me.
Present.
Councilmember Page.
Here.
Councilmember McGarvey.
Here.
Councilmember Tran. Mayor Winston, you have a quorum.
So I'm not sure if Councilmember Tran will be coming in later, but as previously noted, Councilmember Tran of the City Council may be participating in a special council work session by interactive technology pursuant to Minnesota Statute Section 13D.02, rather than in person at the City Council's regular work session place at City Hall, Room A203, 5285th Avenue North, Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. I am physically present in the room, A203, along with council members Amanda Jung, Nicole Klonowski, Shelley Page, and Tony McGarvey. All council members can hear one another and can hear all discussion and testimony. Members of the public can monitor the special work session by calling 1-218-302-5973 and entering meeting ID 24617743 and then pressing the pound sign when you're asked to enter a participant ID. So I know we're going to be heading into the 2025 Minnesota Joint Disparity Study results, and Director Green will be kicking us off.
Yes, I'll just be kicking you off tonight as part of this special work session. We have Keem Independent, who's going to lead us through the disparity study results and just go through an extensive presentation. And we would have Dr. Joseph Broad and Haley Adams will be presenting this information to us. It'll be about a 30-minute presentation. I know it's a little bit longer, but that's about how long it is. And then if we have time, we'll have an opportunity to ask questions as well. So with that, I will turn it over to Keem Independent. You ready?
Great. Yeah. Okay, thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Can hear you just fine.
Great. Thanks so much. I really appreciate you accommodating us virtually today. It's really an honor to present this information to you today. I'm Dr. Joseph Broad. I'm a senior consultant with Keene Independent Research. Haley?
I'm Haley Adams. I'm a consultant with Keene Independent Research.
Are you going to be sharing the screen?
Yeah, we have a presentation to share, if I can get that power.
Yes, you can. You can just share the screen.
Great. It's grayed out on my side. I'm wondering if I need a presenter's link.
Can you give them one? Okay. Let me actually sign in and pull it up, and then I'll be able to share it for you.
Okay. Sounds great.
You can tell me when to move forward.
You bet.
I haven't heard if it's an access set somewhere or a right set. You might just be able to tell.
No, because they should have been able to share. This is the computer in here.
That's weird. We've always been able to have people share it more.
You in here? You don't want to sign in, Jay?
Council.
Okay, so I'll save it in the council.
Council presentation.
Dr. Broad, is it okay that I share it in PDF, because that's what I received a copy of? Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. My apologies, everyone. We will get there in a moment.
Close that window. Just go to the desktop.
Oh, yeah, it's not. Yeah.
not the same one as downstairs.
There's a shortcut on the desktop.
Oh, there's a shortcut.
Yeah.
Going into the time that we would, the opportunity that we would have to speak, so.
Okay, well, we're happy to accommodate your end. I see that there are a lot of printed copies in front of you.
Yes.
If you'd rather wait for the digital version to be available on the screen for the recording, we're happy to wait. We're also happy to get started if you like.
Actually, if you would get started, because we only have 45 minutes, that would be great. And if you can just tell
okay.
me what slide you want, and I will continue to try and pull the documentation, open the documentation.
Okay. That works. Okay, so it looks like most of you have seen the front page of our presentation, just a nice picture of City Hall and some information about us at Keene Independent. If we take a look at slide 2, or page 2, it's a presentation overview. That just lists the topics that we're going to cover in our presentation, including the introduction to the study team, a study overview, a look at utilization, availability, and disparity results, some examples from our marketplace, analyses, conclusions, and then study schedule. On slide 3, there's some information about us, Keene Independent Research. So we're a national firm, 28-person firm, and we've been doing these disparity studies for a long time. We're a leading national expert in this topic, and we've been doing disparity studies as long as there have been disparity studies. So Dave Keene, the founding principal of Keene Independent, effectively made the methodology for disparity studies and has defended the disparity study methodology in court. So this is we have a lot of staff that are experts in this area, and we've been doing this for a long time. We also have local staff. There's one member of our staff who's just right around the corner for you all in St. Paul. So if we take a look at the next page, this highlights the team. This is slide 4. So this is just highlighting that we didn't do this alone. We had a strong sub-consultant team to help us do this study. So we had Holland and Knight, who's a legal leader in disparity studies. So Holland and Knight, Keith Weiner, helped us with the legal appendix. In your report, there's a really lengthy appendix that details the history of these programs and the where they are currently. We also have Donaldson Consulting, who helped us with in-depth interviews. So as part of the study, we had a large availability survey where we called thousands of businesses in Minnesota. And in addition to that, we had a sub-consultant, Donaldson Consulting, reach out to businesses and trade associations to participate in in-depth interviews so we could get more information about their experiences in the marketplace. And then we also had Customer Research International. They helped us with the phone call part of this availability survey. So as we're going to discuss, there are about 76,000 businesses that we called. So CRI, Customer Research International, helped us to do that. Okay, on the next slide, we're going to why perform a disparity study. So the city may have it as a goal that they want to have equity in their procurement processes, or at least they don't want to participate perhaps in a marketplace that may be discriminatory. As we talk about in our marketplace appendices and marketplace sections of our report, it does appear that people of color do have different experiences from white people, white business owners, and white men who are business owners in the market area. And if the city is interested in combating what happens in the private sector, then you may want to develop a contract equity program. However, as we'll discuss, you can't just do that. The city can't just go ahead and implement race and gender conscious contract equity program elements. You have to provide a legal basis to do that. And a disparity study may help to get you that information in order to do that. So the disparity study can provide that legal basis. We can pinpoint where there are disparities, if any, and help pinpoint or develop the right tools for you to address any observed disparities. So I mentioned that you have to provide a legal basis in order to develop race and gender conscious contract equity elements. Let's go to the next slide and talk about where those come from. So I encourage you to take a look at our legal framework analysis. There's a short version in the summary report, but also a lengthy appendix that goes through the entire history of the legal framework for this study. Now, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm sure that there are some lawyers in the room who can attest to this, but I can give you a short synopsis of kind of the basis for why you need these programs. And it goes back to this 1989 Supreme Court decision, City of Richmond versus J.A. Crows and Company. So the City of Richmond had tried to implement some race-conscious contract equity elements without performing a disparity study. At the time, they weren't needed. They weren't needed until this decision. But the Supreme Court, in its decision in this case, applied the strict scrutiny standard. So effectively, there was no compelling governmental interest in applying a contract equity program in the city of Richmond, Virginia, or at least the city hadn't shown a compelling governmental interest that met the court's standards. In addition, the efforts that they had applied, they weren't narrowly tailored. So another part of the strict scrutiny standard is that any efforts be narrowly tailored to remedy the observed discrimination or disparity in public procurement. And so Keenan Bennett developed its methodology based on this legal framework, the strict scrutiny standard, all the other issues that the Supreme Court had pointed out in this case. And we've since successfully defended our methodology in court. But I also wanted to mention that there's been a lot of discussion regarding related programs in national politics recently. And what I want to highlight is that the law around these issues really hasn't changed. That there may be some consultants who say that that these types of programs are illegal and you ought to stop operating them. But this is not true. In fact, in 2023, in the Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard case, the Supreme Court actually favorably cited the J.A. Crozen decision, effectively saying that that if universities want to implement race and gender conscious policies, they ought to provide a legal basis to do it like we do in disparity studies. And so, with the court having the same makeup then as it does now, we feel confident going forward that this is the law, that the case law has been favorably cited, and that the city can consider adopting race and gender conscious contract equity program elements in response to this disparity study information we're going to present to you next. And so, if we'll take a look at the next slide, we can get into what it is that we're examining exactly. So what we're doing here in a disparity study is we want to compare what's the utilization of minority and woman-owned businesses by the city and its procurements compared to what is the availability of minority and woman-owned businesses to complete that work for the city. So the utilization side of this, what we did is we collected the city's procurement data for fiscal years 2017 through 23. There are some types of purchases that are not relevant to a disparity study or contract equity program, such as purchases of utilities or other monopolies. We also removed national market purchases, things that there's just no local market competition for. We removed anything that might have been a payment to another governmental entity. For example, in this joint study, I believe the city had paid the Department of Administration for its share of the study. So anything like that that we saw in your procurement data, we removed from analysis. After removing those exclusions, we analyzed what are the business characteristics, or what are the characteristics of the owner of businesses that you're doing business with. So we used various certification directories, so businesses can become certified as minority or woman-owned businesses. There are other certifications in the region related to other business owner characteristics, such as veteran-owned, disability-owned, members who identify with the LGBTQ plus community, and small business certification. So we looked at all of these certification agencies and any other source of ownership that we could find. For example, there's a Black Chamber of Commerce that has a Black-owned indicator for the members of its chamber. So there were several different ways for us to fill in ownership information for the businesses that you do business with. We also did research for all of these businesses to determine their ownership, and we also called a lot of them as part of the availability survey and collected their ownership information that way. So using all those methods, we were able to then calculate what's the share of city dollars going to each of these groups. And so what we find is about 1% of city dollars was going to minority-owned businesses, and about 4% was going to white woman-owned businesses. On the right, we're looking at small business utilization. So we're seeing almost 70% of city dollars went to small businesses. And then we're looking at businesses who are certified as MBE, WBE, or DBE, Disadvantaged Business Enterprise. And we're seeing about 2.5% there, and about 1% certified as small. So a business can be small without being certified as such. Okay, laying the groundwork for utilization, what we want to do next is talk about how does that compare to availability. On the next slide, next we're going to talk about how does this vary by year. So here we're looking at fiscal year on the x-axis and the share of city dollars going to minority and woman-owned businesses for each of those years. So we're seeing some fluctuation over the years and no clear trend. Now we know that the city is currently working on developing a more comprehensive procurement system and is interested in work in developing small business enterprise efforts to increase small business utilization on its contracts. So if the city has adopted any informal efforts at this point, then we wouldn't have been able to see the effects of any of those efforts up until this point, because we are looking at data from fiscal year 2017 through 23. So if there have been any more recent efforts, say since you started the disparity study about a year ago, then they wouldn't appear here. Just wanted to emphasize that if the city is making those efforts, you may not see it until you start to develop more additional methods to track your progress as you go. Okay, so next we want to talk about availability. So on the next slide, we have a map of Minnesota and all of the regions in Minnesota. So I'm still seeing the MBE utilization by fiscal year on my end. One more, there we are. Okay, so we conducted a large availability survey for about 76,000 businesses in Minnesota and western Wisconsin. So the way that we built that list of businesses was first we collected all the interested vendors lists from all 16 participating agencies or entities in the study. So these are businesses who have previously signed up for bid notifications. We took all of those, combined them, and then combined them with a list of businesses from Dun & Bradstreet. Dun & Bradstreet is a business information aggregator. So you don't have to sign up for Dun & Bradstreet in order to appear there. For example, Keene Independent is on Dun & Bradstreet, but we don't have an account there. We didn't sign up to be on it. So they just aggregate all information they can find about businesses. And then they organize the businesses by the type of work that they do. So we analyzed city data. We determined what are the primary types of work that the city is purchasing, same for the other 15 participating entities. And then we purchased business listings from Dun & Bradstreet for businesses who do that type of work. We made up to 5 attempts to actually speak with these businesses, calling at different times of the day, different days of the week. The survey was open between October and November 2024. Also during that time, there was an online option. So if the business didn't want to take the survey on the phone, they also had the opportunity to take the survey online. The online survey was also advertised in other ways. So we cast a really wide net here and wanted to be as inclusive as possible so that businesses had multiple different venues for completing the survey and participating in the survey. So we were able to contact about 33% of firms that were on that initial list. And here's the headcount for, we can take a look at the next slide. Here's the what we call the headcount availability. So of all of the businesses that we were able to contact who indicated that they were interested in doing public sector work, then about a third of the businesses were minority or woman-owned. The remainder were majority-owned or just white male-owned or not otherwise minority or woman-owned. For example, employee-owned or publicly traded. Now, we take an additional step after this one to make sure that the availability number is not just a reflection of all businesses in the survey, but it's actually a reflection of the different types and sizes of work that the city is purchasing. Taking a look at our next slide, we control for several different factors that we ask about in our survey. So in the survey, we ask firms about the types of work that they can perform, the largest size contract that they've been on or won in the past few years, and the location that they're able to work. So a firm might be from outside the Twin Cities area, but is nonetheless interested in working in the Twin Cities area. So those businesses might be included as available when calculating weighted availability for city contracts. We also control for the contractor's role on the contract, maybe a prime or sub. Some survey respondents indicated that they're only interested in working as a subcontractor or only as a prime, so we controlled for that. We also controlled for when the contract was awarded. So if a business was not yet established at the time that the contract was awarded, we didn't consider them as available for that contract. Now, on a contract-by-contract basis, we control for all of these factors, and then we calculate the share of businesses that are available for that contract by demographic group, and then we weight that availability by the size of that contract. Now, that's all very complicated, but by doing this, this method of weighted availability, controlling for all these factors, weighting it by the size of the contract, then we have a dollar-weighted availability that's curated to city contracts. And in that way, we can have an apples-to-apples comparison of utilization of minority-owned businesses to availability of minority-owned businesses. We take a look at the next slide. We can compare that more directly. So here we're looking at utilization on the left and weighted availability on the right. So in an ideal situation, we would see that these two pie charts are exactly equal to one another. In that case, we would call that parity. But in this case, we're seeing that there are disparities for minority and woman-owned businesses. Then I'm going to pass it over to Haley to talk more about the direct comparisons for each group and how we calculate our disparity index.
Thank you.
Take a look at the next slide. No, go ahead, Haley.
Thanks, Joe. Okay, so now we are going to talk about the disparity results. And as Joe mentioned, we calculated the disparity index using this calculation on the right side of the screen, which takes the percentage of utilization divided by the weighted availability and multiplied by 100 to give us that index. And so anything below an index score of 80 is considered a substantial disparity, and this has been held by courts. Anything between 80 and 100 is still a disparity, but it's not considered substantial, and 100 being parity and above 100 indicating no disparity. And so for these results, we see all contracts and subcontracts in the study period, and that there was a disparity index of 31 for MBEs and WBEs overall, and a disparity index of 19 for MBEs alone, and a disparity index of 39 for WBEs alone. Each of the minority groups had a disparity, but South Asian American owned firms had a disparity with a score of 86, while all others had a substantial disparity. Move to the next slide. So this chart is showing the utilization and availability by industry for the study period, with the dark purple being utilization, light purple being availability. And the study industries were construction, professional services, goods, and other services, with professional services having the greatest difference between the availability and the utilization. We can progress to the next slide. This is a similar chart where we see the utilization and availability for contract sizes. So we looked at contracts up to $100,000, those between $100,000 and $500,000, and those above $500,000, with the greatest difference being for contracts up to $100,000. And this chart is showing us on the top, these are entities that participated in the previous disparity study, and on the bottom, those that participated only in this disparity study. But we see the comparison between the utilization and the disparity over time, and we can see that entities such as Hennepin County made some progress since the last disparity study. Some have fallen back, but some have made progress. And on the bottom part of the chart, we see the city of Brooklyn Park with a disparity index of 31. However, this is comparable to peer entities such as City of Bloomington, University of Minnesota. And it is worth noting that all of these other entities also had substantial disparities. And on this table, we see the disparity results for all contracts and subcontracts for all 16 entities combined. So there was a disparity index of 41 for everything overall, and substantial disparities for each of the minority groups that we looked at, as well as for white women-owned firms. Next slide.
Thanks. And before we get into that, I'm going to ask, do you mind if we go back two slides? Perfect. Another thing I wanted to add here is that if we take a look at Hennepin County, through the second row in the data, you can see that their utilization doubled from 10.6 in the past disparity study to 22.8 in the current disparity study. They had, if you look at the total column in the disparity indices, they had a total of 60 in the last round, and then 102 in the current round, indicating parity between MBE and WBE utilization and availability combined. There's some differences when you drill down and look at MBE versus WBE, but we really want to highlight what Hennepin County was able to do after the last disparity study. They really invested a lot in the tools that they were able to use. So really the difference between Hennepin County and City of Brooklyn Park is the tools at your disposal in order to address any disparities that we found in the disparity study. So these tools are laid out in detail in the report, but one that I'd like to highlight here, or a couple that I'd like to highlight, that one, they were able to lobby the state for the ability to have more direct purchasing power for contracts up to $500,000. That was a really powerful tool that they were able to implement. But another one was that they really just invested in the people who are operating these programs. But we've seen some entities in the past that have programs, but they don't invest in the resources to operate them, so they really only exist on paper. So I mention that because there are a lot of other entities listed here that have gone through exactly what City of Brooklyn Park is going through right now, that a lot of the entities listed on the top part of the chart, they were exactly in your position then as you are now. So they've been through this process, they were able to respond to the recommendations from last time around, and then implement some really powerful tools. So you have other peers, other colleagues at your disposal that you can speak with about what programs are effective, share lists of businesses. These are the lists of businesses that we use for these types of purchases. Then, of course, there are things like certification. You can recognize other certification agencies in the area in order to operate your programs. You don't have to build any of this from scratch. There's already a lot of existing infrastructure, hopefully to make the next steps for you easier. Okay, so if we jump ahead two slides now, I also want to talk about some of the marketplace experiences that we were hearing about. So here we're looking at an example from our availability survey. So for the businesses that took part in the availability survey, we asked them a series of questions about their experiences in the marketplace. And here we've highlighted one for you. That question was whether they've experienced any difficulties obtaining lines of credit or loans. What the results are showing is that about half of minority-owned businesses indicate, yes, I have experienced that kind of barrier. White women-owned businesses were more likely than majority-owned businesses to express that sort of difficulty as well. But the difference wasn't quite so stark as more than half were minority-owned businesses. We also looked at other marketplace experiences reported in the survey. We were seeing very similar trends for other types of barriers, things like bonding requirements, insurance requirements, troubles finding out about bid opportunities, either with public agencies or with prime contractors in the private sector. We also looked in our marketplace analyses at other sources of data, so including American Community Survey data from the census, and also looking at Home Mortgage Disclosure Act data. And what we're finding is a pattern of people of color having a harder time accessing capital, being able to finance their business, being able to grow their business. If they're unable to get a loan, then they're less likely to be able to grow their business. If they can't grow their business, they're less likely to be able to compete for the large businesses, or excuse me, the large contracts that the city is awarding. And so it's a lot of barriers in the marketplace that may keep businesses from doing business with the city. If we take a look at the next slide, there's some themes that we wanted to highlight from our anecdotal data collection. So as I mentioned, in addition to those marketplace questions we asked in our surveys, we also had these long-form in-depth interviews with businesses where we got to talk to them about their experiences in depth. And what they shared with us, it wasn't just about what the data was speaking to before about barriers to access the capital, although we did hear that a lot, but we also heard about other types of barriers, social and cultural barriers, such as good old boy networks. They can't find out about opportunities because they're not part of these perceived networks or good old boy networks. That businesses were having difficulties with prompt payment, either from some of the participating entities in the study or with prime contractors. That they were experiencing bid shopping or bid manipulation, and that's when, as part of say a subcontract goals program, a prime uses them in order to meet goals, but then doesn't follow through because the program doesn't have strong enough compliance measures to disincentivize non-compliance. We also heard a lot about how taxation in Minnesota makes it difficult to either grow or sustain their business. We also heard about gender and race-based stereotyping. So it's a really rich and robust qualitative appendix, and I encourage you all to read it if you get the chance. So next we'll talk about conclusions. So as I mentioned earlier on the presentation, we know that you're working on developing a comprehensive procurement system, but no small business or MBE, WBE contract equity program elements to date. What we're seeing is there is substantial underutilization for MBEs and WBEs, but the results for the city were similar to the others that we were seeing who didn't operate a program, and were similar to the entities that we saw in the last study who didn't have a program at the time. Now, one important piece of operating a program, a contract equity program, is that you really want to emphasize the small business component and then apply MBE, WBE components where you need to. So point four here, 69% of contract dollars are going to small businesses already. So that was higher than we were seeing for other entities. So you're already doing a great job at including small businesses on your procurements. Where we see room for improvement is with minority and woman-owned businesses, given that availability is much higher than the utilization. So on the next slide, we have one more conclusion. Going back to Hennepin County, they were able to double their share of MBE-WBE utilization. They were able to reach parity for MBEs and WBEs combined. And so there are some steps that the city can take to emulate what the county was able to do. And going back to the legal framework slide, the law around this issue hasn't changed, despite a lot of attention in national news media related to diversity efforts, DEI, and similar efforts. Disparity contract equity has not changed. What these programs are all about is remedying discrimination. The compelling governmental interest is not diversity for the sake of diversity, it's anti-discrimination. So as you go forward, as you consider whether to adopt such a program, keep in mind that these are not under threat of being undermined tomorrow, and you have a strong network in Minnesota of entities that are committed to these programs. So next, we'll take a look at recommendations. Okay, so number one is to clearly communicate what these are. So the small business component is an important component of this. It cannot be overlooked. And as a contract equity program, for example, or any other contract equity elements, they're focused on small business efforts first, that's race, gender neutral efforts, and then remedial action that is race and gender conscious when needed. One way that you can communicate this out is that small business enterprise programs, they're good for the economy. It's great for growing businesses, helping the local economy, helping create a vibrant local economy. And then the remedial action piece of this is to address observed discrimination. So it also has benefits, but you can also really focus on the SBE part of this. It's really great for local shops. You'll want to, number two, develop and monitor metrics to gauge success. So that will include the businesses that the firms you're doing business with. You'll want to be able to track their certification status or their self-certification status. So you might, as we explain the report, you might identify which certification agencies in the area you will accept, such as the CERT certification or targeted business enterprise certification. We have some tools that are laid out in the report for you in more detail about how to address your objectives, how to reduce the size of the disparities that we're seeing here. That might be direct select, rotating selection of vendors for small purchases. It might be a contract goals program, or on your largest construction public works projects, you identify some need for subcontracting opportunities. You take some steps to estimate how many of the dollars for these public works contracts might go to subcontractors, the types of work that those subcontractors might do, and then estimate the share of those types of work that would go to minority owned businesses and develop goals. Then you would require your prime contractors to show a plan on how they're going to meet those goals. So in addition, you'll want to develop those registrations and certifications. So as I mentioned, there are some that are already existing in the area, but you'll also want to consider some additional certification types. So for example, one thing that we're recommending to all participating entities in the study is to consider a socially and economically disadvantaged business enterprise certification. So we looked at more groups than we reported here, and we found that there may be evidence of barriers for other businesses that didn't meet the demographic classifications that we discussed. There may be also some barriers for LGBTQ plus owned businesses, disability owned, veteran owned, etc., and they may not fit the existing certification eligibility requirements. And so the city and other certification agencies, they may consider adopting this SEDBE certification, which would require a personal narrative rather than a presumption of disadvantage. So a business, even if they don't fit into one of these groups, might say that I have experienced discrimination based on my immutable characteristics, and here's the evidence of that, here's my narrative to support that, and then be certified as SEDBE and be able to benefit from program elements that the city adopts or others in the area adopt. Five, flexibly operate tools. So again, this is a combination of both race-neutral, gender-neutral elements and race and gender-conscious elements. Apply the small business elements everywhere that you can and the race and gender-conscious elements where you need to. And back to the point about funding these programs, is that if you don't hire the staff to operate them, then you don't have a program. It may just be on paper only. So cannot overstate the importance of recommendation number six. And finally, I know that I've taken up a lot of time here, but finally, I just wanted to quickly go over the the study schedule. So we are wrapping up the public comment period for the study at the end of this week. And after that, we'll be finalizing the reports and concluding the study at the end of the month. So I know I've covered a lot, and I'm happy to take any questions at this point.
So I'm wondering if, unless anybody has any like urgent questions, if we can get those to Dr. Green, because I know to Director Green.
Yes.
Always. Same difference the way you work. So you've mastered the finance world. So, but I would say maybe we get those to Director Green, and then we can maybe have a work session to talk through some potential what we're doing, and then maybe think about some ideas in terms of how we can move this work forward. But I think this is an important step in terms of us understanding what we are dealing with.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a quick question for the researchers. In the WBE breakout from MBE, I'm just curious, because there are women of color that are under WBE. How did you know for certain that this group is not?
Yeah, that's a good question. So going back to the legal framework, you don't have to go all the way back to that slide. I'll just mention very briefly. So there are different legal standards depending on the immutable characteristic. So for race-conscious program elements, that requires that strict scrutiny that I was talking about. There's also intermediate scrutiny, which is a standard that's not quite as difficult to reach as a race-based program. The MBE and WBE split is what is required based on that court case and the legal framework. But we also recognize that intersectionality is important, that women of color do face two different types of discrimination, and that should be recognized, that they can be discriminated against on the basis of race and gender.
Yeah, when it comes to my question, though, is that you specifically said WBEs in this were white women business enterprise.
Yes.
How do you know they're all white? Did you screen for that?
Yes, we did.
Okay, that was my question, because I did want to get to the heart of the what you were just talking about, Doctor, with the extra challenges that women of color face as a WNBE. And I think going further with some of the, you know, recommendations, how do we make sure particularly to work with that kind of group or to develop programs that make sure that they are not facing discrimination if they're challenged on both,
right,
both fronts?
Yes, that's a good question. And so it's important to be sensitive about that intersectionality, right? That women of color can face two types of discrimination. One way that we've seen others approach that is, well, we can stack goals, for example. Say we have a subcontractor goals program, and we're going to put separate minority-owned business goals on it and WBE goals on it. So if a firm is WBE certified, that doesn't mean that they have to be white woman-owned. The MBE-WBE distinction that we made here is just for this statistical analysis. When it comes to application of goals, of any of these contract equity elements, a woman-owned firm can be certified as WBE, even if they're a woman of color. And so they can benefit from both the MBE elements of a program as well as the WBE elements of a program. We've seen this done by, say, we're placing MBE goals and WBE goals on a project. An NWBE might be able to apply for meeting those goals on a project, or either one of the goals or both. That's one possible approach.
Okay. And one quick question then, just in relating to your data that you've compiled. Is there data missing about women of color WBEs and what their utilization versus availability is?
It's not something that's readily available. However, we are going to provide you with the data that we used in order to do all of these analyses if the city wants to take any additional steps to examine intersectionality.
Great, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for the presentation. And like I said, I think we can direct questions to Director Green and then have a work session to follow through with what our procurement process is going to look like, and then move from there. All right, so we'll take a brief recess for 2 minutes and then meet downstairs for to begin the regular council meeting. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Oh, and thank you, Director, for making this happen.
All right. Actually,
Paige. Oh, I'm adjourning, so I'm adjourning this meeting.
Yeah. You had a question, too, about the architecture costs for the fire station.